Everyone, and welcome to Minute 64 of Season 3 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1988 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today for the fourth day in a row is Andrea Loaf, author of a published academic article on Die Hard. Welcome back to the show, Andrea.
And thank you again for having me, Rob.
Well, you're giving such a unique perspective on things that this is just so much fun. You know,
really most of my other guests, Die Hard.
There you go. Most of my guests are not giving an academic view of Die Hard. So, you know, it's always fun to mix it up a little bit here and there. So that works.
Love a good close reading.
There you go. So episode 64 begins with Hans wanting the bag and ends with John answering Al as to how he should call him. So basically, yesterday's episode ended with Hans responding to Franco and telling him, okay, you know what? I don't care what's going on outside. I'm waiting for the FBI. But what's important to me now is I need to find the bag. If I don't find the bag, if we don't find the bag, we're in trouble. And then he says, Fritz, go help Uli. We must have the detonators. And at this point, we continue. Now, first of all, how can he help Uli? Like, where is Uli? You know, we don't even know where Uli is, what he's doing, or anything like that. We know who Uli is. You know, Uli's the oriental-looking guy, you know, who...
The guy with the candy bar.
Later on, the guy with the candy bar, yes. Mm-hmm. Played by a very famous, I guess you could say, stunt actor. Hmm. Okay, who known as Al Long. Who was in so many things. I mean, I still remember seeing him in the first season of 24 and being shocked. Oh. You know, that 13 years after Die Hard, he's still playing the heavy. You know, he was in Lethal Weapon also. Wow. You know, he was in a lot of he has 46 movie credits and then as an actor, and then he has 26 credits as a stuntman. You know, movies, and we're not even going to like what he has for TV and things like that. So yeah, it's always fun seeing him, especially knowing that this was sort of the beginning of his career. Let's put it that way. I mean, he was in a whole bunch of other movies before, and he was in Big Trouble in Little China, Running Scared, My Science Project. He was in Twilight Zone the movie. He was in Lethal Weapon. He was in Steel Justice. He was actually in She's Having a Baby. Which, you know, doesn't really fit in with his persona. He played the photographer. Yeah. And he was also in Action Jackson before this movie came out. And
then, Action Jackson.
And then from Die Hard, which is what I will always remember him in. You know, he's such a fun character to watch, you know, with all the little things that he does on the side, especially the candy bar, which we'll get to in a few weeks. We won't spoil that too much right now. Oh. Actually, it's more than one candy bar also. That's the thing. We're not even talking about one candy bar. And right. So the whole question is like, you know, how can he help him? He's sending Fritz to go help Uli. Where is Uli? How, you know, like we don't ever see Uli chasing John, you know, because if he's saying that if you want Uli to go find the detonators, so therefore he must be trying to find John.
Yeah.
That's what it would sound like. But apparently it's not. Who knows? You know. But what I like about it is that Hans is still calm and collective about the whole thing. You know, he's not stressed out. You know, he says we need to find the bag. He's not, you know, he's still keeping his cool throughout the whole thing. All right. And then we continue with John's description to Al as to what's going on. And he goes, they got an arsenal up here. They got missiles, automatic weapons, and enough plastic explosives to orbit Arnold Schwarzenegger. They're down to 9 now, counting the skydiver you met. These guys are mostly European, judging by their clothing labels, and I love how he pauses. Cigarette.
Yeah.
You know, he looks around, he's like remembering cigarettes. They're well-financed and very slick. So this whole diatribe that he gives off here is just great. You know, because like, first of all, let's try and break it down. He talks about the fact that that they have an arsenal. Okay, now do you know what an arsenal is?
A place. I mean, I think of arsenal as in a similar way as armory, of just like a whole bunch of guns, a whole bunch of weapons. That's what I think of.
Yeah. Okay. An armory and an arsenal are just about the same thing. There are some slight differences, but we're not going to really get into that. But yes, it's a place where you store arms and ammunitions. Sometimes they're made there also, and they maintain them, repair them, you know, but mostly they're stored in those places. Okay.
Yeah.
The word actually was first used in the 16th century. And it comes from the, a French word, which was originally, was derived from an Italian word, which is thought to be a corruption of an Arabic word, which basically means manufacturing shop. That's what it basically comes down to throughout all the different things. Now, what's really cool that I found out is that in the 21st century, there's a new term that's known as a floating armory. Do you have any idea what that would be?
Well, that sounds like a boat or kind of like a, I'm forgetting the name for it in the military where they have just that base container, not container, but I'm just thinking of this giant, a boat is such a terrible word, but that's all I can think of right now. Like that had, that is kind of the base for like all the planes and helicopters and.
Are you talking about an aircraft carrier? Stuff.
Maybe, yes. Floating right. In the middle of the ocean.
Okay, well, what it is it's a ship that stores weapons to be supplied to merchant vessels in international waters subject to piracy so that the weapons do not enter territorial waters where they would be illegal. So basically, basically they're there to rescue people that get hit by pirates, you know, but they stay in international waters in order to stay safe. Okay, so yesterday when we were talking about the script, so it says that they have enough plastic explosives to orbit, what do we say, Kate Smith?
Kate Smith, and I'm like, who? I'm just thinking, who's Kate Smith? Why would, that just seems so random to me. Like, Arnold Schwarzenegger makes sense for the time and everything.
Right. Wasn't she like one of the Charlie's Angels?
Was she?
Was that Kate Smith?
I don't know.
No, that was Kate Jackson. Name. No, oh, sorry, it was Kate Jackson and... And Jacqueline Smith, that's where I got it mixed up. But so Kate Smith, she was a singer. Oh, that's even stranger.
Like, yeah, why?
She's, why Kate Smith? That, I guess that goes with the Roy Rogers connection. The way that sounds.
I think that was a good edit to Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
Because you think of the macho like.
Yeah, she actually died. She died 2 years before this movie came out. She died in 1986.
Oh.
She was dubbed the Songbird of the South and would be forever etched into hearts and minds of millions of Americans as true American symbol of World War II, especially after giving voice to early Irving Berlin's classic song, God Bless America.
Hmm.
Okay, so there we go. She has
a different layer of meaning.
Yeah, completely. I don't know why they would. Maybe because her voice? I don't know. That's really strange. Yeah. So instead, he uses a much much closer pop culture reference of Arnold Schwarzenegger. Do you know Arnold Schwarzenegger's real name?
Oh my goodness, no, I do not.
It is Arnold Alois Schwarzenegger. A L O I S. And now we know why no one ever uses that.
Yeah.
he was born on the 30th of July, 1947. He's an Austrian-American actor, film producer, businessman, former bodybuilder, and politician, and he served as the 38th governor of California for a total of 8 years.
Yeah, and how would John McClane have known later, seriously. John? Later.
Correct. Do you know some of his nicknames, Schwarzenegger?
Nothing is coming off the top of my head. I just keep
seeing. He was known as the Austrian Oak. He's known as Arnie Schwartzy or the Governator.
Right, the Governator.
Exactly. He actually acknowledged using performing enhancing drugs when they were still legal back in the 1970s when he was a bodybuilder. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot of people have said that that he has damaged his health because of that, but there has been no way to substantiate that over the years.
Oh.
Right. So continuing with what John says, he says they're down to 9 now. Now, how does he know how many they have? He hasn't counted everybody. He's been counting, yes. But the last count that we got, I think he was at 5 or 6. So has he up to 9?
Yeah. Because I don't think they were definitely not all in the room when he first saw Hans and he saw the killing of Takagi. So I don't know what sort of eye, like, you know, he's eyeballing. I don't know how he's doing that.
Yeah, I don't know either. And do you know how many terrorists there are?
I mean, is he talking about 12 to 15? Is it 12?
No, I'm asking how many are there really? I'm asking you.
Okay. Well, let's see. So we've got the guy downstairs who took the
Eddie.
The front desk seat. Yeah,
Eddie.
Franco and Marco. Let's see, the two twins. They're not twins. They're brothers. Carl
and Tony.
And then there's those. There's the two that load like that like later on. They're the big missile that they have.
James and Alexander. Those are James and Alexander.
Dio. So I think we're closer to like 10.
Well, right now you've said 8, okay? So besides you've said 8. Now you got Hans.
There's a guy.
You didn't mention Hans.
I need to mention Hans. There's the guy at the end that, like, I think he just gets slapped or punched and falls over.
Christoph. Like, okay, that's 10. So far, and you didn't mention one of the people that we mentioned earlier today.
Oh. I know have we mentioned the guy with the long hair? I know there's one that you call Peter Brady, and I don't remember who that.
No,
that's Peter, just Eddie, right?
No, Peter Brady is Franco.
Franco, okay. Well, I mentioned him. Yeah, I don't.
Right. So you didn't mention Heinrich.
Antoni. Oh. Okay. Oh, I thought I did. Okay. No.
I don't think so. I think you. Okay. The one that you're thinking of is Christoph.
Mm-hmm.
Who just gets hit in the face and we barely see him.
Yeah.
Okay. Uli.
Oh, right. Did I forget him with the candy bars?
Yes. So there's a total of 13.
Okay.
But what's funny is that, and I've mentioned this numerous times, on all the posters and everything like that, it says there are 12.
Yeah. Maybe they don't count Hans. I don't know. Or they're just not counting the guy that gets punched in the face at the end, because he's not very important.
No, but on the poster, that's what gets me.
Yeah, that's a big oversight.
Yeah. So when John is mentioning off all these different things about why he thinks they're European and stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
he takes a 6-second pause before he says cigarettes.
Yeah.
That's a long pause for them not to have cut down.
Mm-hmm.
It means that we really wanted to be able to see him look the other way and try to remember, you know, because of the cigarettes. And the way that he says it always reminds me of the line from Return of the Jedi, where Luke is being silent and, you know, Vader's trying to read his thoughts, and he goes, mm-hmm. "So, you have a sister," and he has the same type of pause. So I just thought that's great. reminded me of that.
And it's a little bit of a callback to earlier when because he's always checking his surroundings. And whenever I see that part that we're talking about, the pause before cigarettes, I'm thinking he's trying to make sure that no one is coming to, like, compromise his position. But I mean, I never thought that it had never occurred to me that he could just have forgotten that he smoked Tony's cigarettes and was like, or had taken.
And Heinrich, he also took Heinrich.
He took them out of his pocket. Oh, Heinrich, yeah.
He took them both. He had from both.
He's got a lot of cigarettes for one person.
Well, you know, he's slightly stressed.
Yeah. take the edge off a little bit from of the entire situation. We were talking about that it's been hours. He's been in there for a long time. That wears down on a person.
Correct. So then he mentions also that they're very slick.
Mm-hmm.
They're well-financed and very slick. So I found tons of definitions of the word slick, you know, from oil slick and smooth surfaced and stuff like that. But the one that fits the best here is characterized by subtlety or nimble wit, you know, especially clever. So I think that fits in really well. But the thing is, I don't know if that's a term that I would have attributed to someone of John McClane's status. You know, as a streetwise cop, would he say that they're slick in that fashion?
I mean, it does feel a little bit like a slang term that would be used. So that's how I interpreted it when I hear it.
Now, slick could also mean extremely good. So maybe that's what he's referring to.
I didn't think about it. Yeah, like very. I feel like that word doesn't necessarily apply to all of the terrorists, but really to Hans. That is like, I feel like most of his interactions are with Hans. He can handle all the other guys, although Carl is a bit more difficult. But I think Hans has that wit. Hans is good at what he does. I think he embodies that word the most out of all of the terrorists.
Yeah, that's true. Also, another definition is a shrewd or untrustworthy person. So that could, he's not saying that. He's not saying that they're untrustworthy.
No, no.
They're well-financed and very slick. No. Yeah, I don't think that fits in there. All right. And, you know, then he continues by talking about the phony. And he goes, then Al says to him, well, how do you know that? And he says, I've seen enough phony IDs in my time to recognize that the ones they got must have cost a fortune.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is a very strange comment to make also. Because, you know, how is he supposed to know how much an ID would cost and stuff like that? And I'll have to do a little bit of research into that. Maybe next week when that comes up again, I'll I'll talk a little more about that one. Who knows?
Yeah.
And then John says, and add that all up. I don't know what the fuck it means, but you got some badass perpetrators and they're here to stay.
Mm-hmm.
And then Alice says, I hear you, partner. LA's finest are on it. So light them if you got them. Mm-hmm. And then we get a shot of John already lighting up a cigarette. And he goes, way ahead of you, partner. So then he says, well, what do I call you? And he says, call me. And then the minute gets cut off.
Mm.
It would have been a great place for him to say, call me Al. I don't know what year that's. I think that song came out afterwards, but still.
I don't know.
I think the Simon & Garfunkel song came out in the Paul Simon song came out in maybe 92, 93, something like that.
I'm trying to remember. That. I know Chevy Chase is in that.
Yes.
That video.
Yeah, Chevy Chase is in the video. It's very funny watching that video. Seeing him with actually, it came out in 1986.
Okay.
What do you know? I thought it came out. It was the lead single of Paul Simon's seventh album, Graceland. So yeah, it actually became Simon's biggest, one of Simon's biggest solo hits.
Wow.
I wonder if it was because of Chevy Chase.
It helps.
Yes. Now I like the way that this conversation between the two of them shows that they're quickly getting close, even though everyone can hear them. This is not a private conversation. You know, Hans can hear them and Theo can hear them and all the other terrorists and all the other police around and everything like that.
It's
like
so easy to forget that.
Yeah. And they make us forget it very, very simply because we're just focusing on the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and John also feels relaxed at this point. You know, he's already, he finds like a corner for him to, you know, hole up in at the same time and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I think that works. You know, and also this whole conversation is also exposition for us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to get an idea as to, okay, let's put together everything that John has seen so far.
Yeah.
You know, because he's never stated any of these things.
Mm-mm. Yeah, so it's kind of hard. As an audience member, you're trying to pick up on all of them, but yes, thank you
for putting it all together. For
what I've just seen, maybe I forgot something. You know, it's kind of just a nice little aid for us to remember.
Yeah, completely. So, do you have anything else you want to say about this minute before we get into the script?
No, I don't.
Okay. All right, so, I mean, as we mentioned earlier and yesterday, the whole difference between, Arnold Schwarzenegger and Kate Smith. Mm-hmm. But there's also a point here where Powell then says to McClane, so how many are there? And then McClane responds, figuring there's at least one to cover the lobby, a couple with the hostages. I'd say they came in with about a dozen. But they're down to nine now, including the skydiver you already met. Mm-hmm. See, that makes more sense than the way they showed it in the movie.
Yeah.
You know, because we see the way that his mind is working. He's saying, okay, they came with 12, and there's this guy and that guy. And so I'm assuming it's around 12.
Yeah.
You know, but here it's definitive. In the movie, they make it sound very definitive. Mm-hmm. You know, and there's in the script, it doesn't mention the fact that it's cigarettes. It says that he talks about the phony IDs. He talks about the phony IDs. Mm-hmm. He talks about the fact that they're European based on their clothing labels. And they're well-financed and very slick. Doesn't say anything about the cigarettes. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad they added that in there because the cigarettes does work well, especially the fact that he's lighting up a cigarette, as they say.
Exactly. It's a nice touch.
Yeah. It works well. All right. Great. So every Thursday, we have another segment called Off the Beaten Track Holiday Edition, where my guests will give another anecdote story about something that happened to them over the course of their life around the holiday times.
Sure.
Some story related to it.
Sure.
You got another one for us,
Andrea? I do. It is kind of a funny story about my husband and I. And
funny stories are fun.
Yes, exactly. It's and it also lends itself a little to the how much word gets around in small rural areas. So my husband and I were together a couple years. But we're for sure we were getting a house together. We were planning on closing on the house in January. So this is leading up to, you know, we're going to Thanksgiving together, you know, eventually we'll get to Christmas, and we're in our minds both like, well, eventually we want the house because we want to get away from awful neighbors, but we know eventually we're going to get married. So it's like, we weren't engaged yet, but we had talked about it and we're like, yeah, like this is going to happen. And I think some of my family just assumed we already were. So we got to that Thanksgiving and my grandma, who I mentioned in the other episode, she and everyone else was like, congratulations, like congratulating us on an engagement that had not happened yet. And it was just a little awkward.
Oh, wow.
It was like, I don't know what my husband might have been thinking, because obviously we got married eventually.
He was probably thinking to himself, do I have to get on one knee right now and do this here?
Like, we're just like, no, we're getting a house. You know, there was the little bit of the culture differences of what order you need to be doing those things in. But later on, after those occurrences at Thanksgiving and at Christmas, I heard from my best friend was like, my mom heard you're engaged. And they do not live in the same county. They live like many miles away. And somehow her mom.
Maybe they have a party line.
Exactly. Yeah. It seems like it because word traveled, because her mom had heard from someone that like my mom's or my parents' neighbor down the road. They just happened to have this mutual friend who my mom had just been blabbing all on about how, I don't know why my mom would have told her I was engaged. She knew I wasn't, but so it just word traveled about that we were engaged. I was getting congratulated from people who I hadn't told and that about my engagement that had not
about something happened. That hadn't happened.
Even happened. So once it did, I mean, that following February, it only took a few months. Like we got engaged on Valentine's Day, within a few months, but it was just like,
okay,
it was a little early to be congratulating us. I think it's just because the way we did things, we bought we went to get engagement rings together. So I knew he was eventually going to, but it's like, let's focus on one thing at a time. Like, we're focusing on moving first. But
right.
People get carried away.
Apparently.
Yes.
Oh, that's a great story. Wow. Thank you very much. Thank you for sharing that with everybody. And the people in the next town over are going to quickly call you and say, oh, we heard you got engaged before you got engaged.
They will. They will. I'm sure I'll hear something about this.
Probably. All right. And getting in touch with me is quite simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. Or you can go directly to my website, movierobminute.com. If you want to get in touch with Andrea, just shoot me a message via any of those platforms, and I will pass it on to her. So, Andrea, have you had enough? Or do you want to do one more day of this to talk more, a little bit more about Die Hard and maybe meet some new characters?
I'm ready for one more day. I can't say no to one more day. I want to keep talking about this.
All right. Excellent. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.